You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hi, and welcome to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I am Grant Goldberg, joined today by Spike Friedman. And boy, did that game suck for the Seahawks. They lost to the Jacksonville Jaguars. The game was close, but at the end it was in embarrassing fashion after a few fights, after whistles that just didn't look good, mainly on the Seahawks and then the Jacksonville Jaguars' fans. But the game was 30-24. The Seahawks definitely made it closer than the game really looked. Spike, what are your instant thoughts about the Seahawks' loss?
I mean, there's a lot going on. There's, you know, a mix of non-calls, the fighting. I'm sure those are going to be the big stories over the course of the week. I wouldn't be shocked if there were suspensions. If anyone does, I don't know. We'll see about our deal. The biggest thing, though, is that this was a difficult game that played out on balance, like, not how we expected, but sort of to the degree we expected, and then we didn't rise to meet the challenge of the game. Fortunately, the Rams both injured Carson Wentz and lost, which means the NFC is still wide open, and we've got to go out and win next week. Unfortunately, my biggest, like, long-term takeaway from this game is that Bobby Wagner is out and has got a hamstring injury, which probably means a couple weeks.
And the thing is, too, it's Bobby Wagner and KJ Wright with a concussion, and it's huge going into the game where we face the LA Rams and Todd Gurley, a back that traditionally struggles against Seattle, but that's a Bobby Wagner-led Seattle defense. And so it's a stark difference, as we saw down the stretch of the game without Wagner. But I was going to add to your point that, you know, this is a game that, like, was really big for the Seahawks to win, and given the Rams result would have been huge because we would have went into first place in the division. But, you know, if there's ever a week for the Seahawks to embody that, you know, 1-0 every week kind of thing,
it's this week
because you can't dwell on that kind of loss. And suspensions would be huge, you know, given what happened at the end of the game. So we can't afford that, and they can't afford to dwell on it given how big the game is coming up next week.
Yeah, and let's not move past this game because there's a lot of really interesting stuff that happened.
Definitely.
Because of the injuries on defense, it's like tough to read too much in all the gameplay, but there were some really excellent and really terrible performances by the Seahawks all over the field. And I think probably the best way to go about this might be to sort of move unit to unit. Grant, where do you want to start, defense, offense, or special teams?
Well, I think it'd be just be easiest to start with the offense.
And
Russell Wilson kind of being all over the field.
Entire game,
he, you know, he was throwing it to the Jacksonville Jaguars. And, you know, down the stretch, you know, we saw that kind of killer Russell Wilson that we've been used to seeing. But, you know, in a game versus the Jacksonville Jaguars, you can't give up that many free plays. I mean, like, they have the most points in the league off turnovers. And, you know, these are bad throws from Russell Wilson. And you know, on that first pick for Doug Baldwin, like, yeah, he lost his footing, but he shouldn't have thrown that ball in the first place. And it was just a really, really poor decision-making from Russ in a lot of spots in this game.
I will say, though, okay, well, so first of all, Russ is the discrepancy between what he does in the first three quarters of games versus the fourth quarter is bordering on the absurd. By the end of the third quarter, his burgeoning MVP candidacy was over. By the end of the fourth quarter, if the Seahawks win out and Tom Brady is cold down the stretch, he's the favorite again. Like, that's so insane. I mean, yeah, he had three picks, but, you know, one of them's an arm punt, which was weird, but, you know, it's what, second and 23, and he basically pinned the Jaguars at their own five. Like, I'll take it.
And a drive one that of they them ended up all getting 3 points on, too.
Yeah, exactly. One of them is Baldwin getting bodied, and one of them is, you know, a badly placed throw to Graham. Those aren't the worst throws. Like, as bad as his line was through three quarters, it wasn't it was just so weird. And then the fourth quarter, he puts together unbelievable. He had 260-plus-yard touchdowns, and it's ludicrous. He's such a weird player this year. And that Eagles game felt like it was something that might get him back on track, get a little quarter-to-quarter consistency. Nope, we're just getting this version of Russell Wilson, which I think is why, coming off that Eagles game, I was still skeptical about him as an MVP, because he's had games like this already this year. Maybe not with three interceptions, but where he just misses for a while and then all of a sudden turns into an MVP player. In order to be the MVP, you sort of got to do it all four quarters. That said, in order to be my favorite quarterback, Russ showed all of it today. Even in his it's just such a, he's so weird right now. It's weird, man.
It almost felt like, you know, he was weary of, you know, the Jacksonville Jaguars defenders whenever he dropped back. And, like, obviously he should be cognizant of, like, where they are on the field, but it seemed like it played a big factor in the way he threw the ball today. And
yeah,
I'm diverging from the point a little bit, but as we said, the Eagles beat the Rams and it keeps the Seahawks season on track. And the NFC is wide open, but like you said, the Seahawks beat the Eagles, and it kind of felt like a game that could put them on track for the rest of the season to run the table. But, you know, obviously that didn't happen, and, you know, if, you know, we wanted the Seahawks to make a big run, we would probably need them to get a home field advantage for at least one game. And, you know, we kind of saw that go out the window today, and, you know, that's
kind of, except if we win next game, we're the number four seed,
right?
You know,
we want to buy in the first round. I mean, but
oh yeah, that's good.
If we want to buy in the first round, you know, this is a game that we needed to win, because Seahawks haven't traveled as well as you'd want a Super Bowl contender to travel. Yeah. You know, they're 4-3 on the road this year, and you know, if we're traveling to Atlanta, you know, that's, you know, bad for us, because, you know, whenever we go to the dome at this time of the year, it's not really good for us. You know, I'm aware of the history, and I know every year is different, but, you know, this is a team that they already lost to in the Falcons that, you know, they struggled with. And if we're out without Bobby Wagner, if we're out without KJ Wright, you know, who knows? And, you know, Carolina just beat Minnesota.
I don't think either of those teams is that good. That's my hot take, but that's neither.
We saw a Blake Bortles Jacksonville Jaguars team beat them 30-24, and I'd say that, you know, Case Keenum's better with the Vikings defense behind him too.
There's a few different things going on there. One is, and let's stick with the offense for a second, Seahawks running game is not back. Mike Davis got hurt, but even when he was in, we weren't exactly gashing the Jaguars. Now, some of that is game flow. We weren't really in a position to try to run the ball, but when we did run the ball, we were not effective against that Jaguars defense, which makes it very difficult to beat the Jaguars. They're a brutal matchup if you can't run the ball at all, and we couldn't, and we didn't. And so we didn't do as much on offense as we could have otherwise. I will say that the Vikings are not as good a pass defense. I mean, they're better. They might be, I don't know if they're a better overall defense. I don't think they are. But they are a better run defense and a less good pass defense, which means I think we might be able to do more against them. Who knows? I mean, also, I'm just like super skeptical of both those teams. I don't think the Panthers are that good either. I mean, everyone in the NFC is questionable at this point.
Right. But I mean, I'm saying the bigger point in all of this is having to travel to these teams. It gives them advantage already over the Seahawks.
Yeah, sure. I guess my bigger thing is, like, we still can't run the ball. Like, our fate is inextricably tied to Russell Wilson's performance game to game. And I think he is capable of, as we saw against the Eagles, putting together a clean game that gives us a chance to beat anybody, home or road. That said, when weather gets involved, he started slow. He's been less good on the road on grass. Like, I'm not as worried, weirdly, about going to Atlanta, because weather and field situation are not factors.
Well, in that case, Minnesota, too.
Exactly. No, exactly. Minnesota could be problematic. Philadelphia, even without Carson Wentz, could be problematic. You know what I, like, at some point, before any of this, we still got to beat a really good Rams team in Seattle, probably without Bobby Wagner. the Wagner's injury, hamstring, is usually 2 to 3 weeks. That's what we saw with Earl. KJ's injury with the concussion is either 1 week or no weeks, but we don't know yet. You know, it's a concussion. We have no idea how he's going to make it through protocol. And he was ruled out pretty quickly, which suggests it was at least somewhat severe, which is horrifying. The idea of going up against that Rams offense with neither of our starting linebackers is very scary. So we don't need to get ahead of ourselves. I'm just going to say offense-wise, just to close that up, Doug and Jimmy had really bad games. I mean, Doug Baldwin got sort of blown up by Jalen Ramsey on the interception, and then it was Jalen Ramsey who he was looked afraid to try to go through to get that first down late in the fourth quarter that would have extended the game.
It seemed like he was trying to think way too much on that, and he's like, oh, yeah. Like, you know, Jalen Ramsey, you know, as fast as he could close in, he wasn't closing in too fast to where he couldn't get the first down. And I know clock's a factor in that, and I know that's probably what he was probably thinking, but you have to go for the first down in that scenario.
It's also a little bit of a business decision, the way Ramsey had been going through him. And Doug hasn't been that guy in his career. So, and look, if guys want to make business decisions, they can. I'm just saying, like, that was not his best work. And then Graham had to drop the play before that, and was basically a non-factor through the entire game. And when you're talking about a Jaguars defense whose weaknesses are defending the pass in the middle of the field, it's a really, really disappointing output from our slot receiver and our tight end, and genuinely a shocking discrepancy given that both of our X and Z wide receivers were able to absolutely exploit the opposition and get monster touchdowns. Like, the way in which this game played out for the offense in terms of run pass balance, in terms of the number of turnovers and Russell Wilson big plays on the, like, from like way up top, doesn't look that crazy. If you had told me Russell Wilson had 2 TDs, 3 picks, we put up 24 points, the running game was ugly, the passing game was uneven, but we got some shots when we took them and missed some other big ones, I'd be like, okay, yeah, I guess that sounds right. If you had told me that Doug Baldwin and Jimmy Graham would be non-factors, Paul Richardson and Tyler Lockett would take the top off the Jaguars' defense, and Mike Davis wouldn't play, basically, for the second half, I'd be like, whoa, that is a weird way to get there.
Yeah, and it was, like you said, it was a weird game. The Jacksonville Jaguars were up 17 at one point in the fourth quarter, and Russell Wilson, and credit to Tyler Lockett and Paul Richardson, you know, kind of broke the game, you know, made it a lot closer, and gave us hope down the stretch. And before we get into things about the defense, we're going to take a quick break.
Yep.
We are back, and we're going to talk about the defense for a little bit, what went right in some situations and what went wrong for the most part. And we're going to kick things off with the defensive line that really was kind of unimpressive today, right, Spike?
Yeah, it was a disappointing performance from the Seahawks defensive line, especially as the guys in the middle went out with, you know, we lose Wagner, we lose KJ Wright. We needed that defensive line to step up and put some pressure on Blake Bortles, and they really didn't. It was an impressive performance from the Jags offensive line, giving Bortles the time to not make mistakes. He only had a couple errant passes all day, and we weren't able to turn those into turnovers because we weren't able to rack up the sort of sacks that would change the game and force him to make more difficult plays. And also, it's just like at a certain point when a lot of guys are out, the few stars who were left on the field were Sheldon Richardson and Michael Bennett and Frank Clark. And they just didn't impose their will on the game until, you know, with 30 seconds left, they tried to blow up a victory formation and wound up getting penalized and potentially suspended. So that's not covering themselves in glory in a game where they needed to for us to have a chance to win it.
Yeah, and as frustrating as it can be when it seems like, you know, the game is over, you know, you got to stay composed. You got to, you know, keep good sportsmanship, you know, on display. And that's obviously disappointing. It was a little reminiscent of after the interception in Super Bowl 49, how the team kind of blew up after the plays. And, you know, it's something you never want to see. It resulted in Sheldon Richardson getting ejected. It's resulted in Quentin Jefferson getting ejected and almost getting in a fight with some fans getting hit with some food.
It might have been that they threw bananas at him, which seems maybe innocuous if you're just an American football fan, but if you're a European football fan, that is a way that players have been racially targeted in the past.
Yes.
And so I don't want to minimize. I don't even want to weigh in on the Quentin Jefferson stuff until we know more. And also, he didn't get into the crowd, so I don't think that's going to turn into anything. You know, it isn't a Ron Artest situation because it didn't happen, even if it looked for a second like it might go in that direction. I'm glad it didn't, and I want to learn more before weighing in on that.
Yeah, but even, you know, losing Wagner potentially for this week and extended time after that, and maybe KJ Wright, you know, we're already, you know, pretty thin on the defensive line. We're already down Cliff Averill this season, and Deion Jordan has a neck injury. Nas Jones has that ankle. And so, you know, you need all the guys you can. You know, you need to get healthy guys to step up and stay on the field. And, you know, whether that be, you know, staying healthy or, you know, not getting ejected and possibly suspended, you know, you just got to do everything you can to remain on the field. And it's going to be huge, like I said, against the LA Rams who are coming to Seattle and Todd Gurley.
Yeah. And before we, this is sort of going out of order, but Ben Baldwin, Guga31BB on Twitter just sent out the win probability if the holding call on Paul Richardson is made would have been 40% for the Seahawks. After it wasn't made, it was 1%. Wow. So that is a 39% swing on that call. Now, I'm sure there are no Falcons fans listening to this, and if there were, they'd be yelling about the Seahawks in the past and similar calls going other ways. It doesn't matter. This was egregious and an incredibly frustrating way in which to go out with a sort of 39% swing on a just brutally blown missed call.
Yeah, especially in a game where a lot of little penalties were really put under a microscope and called on both sides.
And Gene Steratore is pretty good at calling it even. It didn't feel like it was, with the exception of that taunting penalty early, and who knows what Effetti said if he did say something. You know, I didn't hear it, but I also wasn't at the game.
Yeah.
Gene Steratore called it both ways the whole way. It didn't feel like we were getting robbed to that point at all, even if there were a lot of the penalties were weird all game. That was just so blatant. Wilson took a big hit from Campbell on that too that looked late. I don't know.
Yeah, no. Calais Campbell, you know, he didn't have like such a huge game like he used to do against the Seahawks. Granted, it's a different offensive line, but after the play on an earlier series, he absolutely threw Effetti to the ground like a little rag doll. So, you know, him collapsing on Russell Wilson after the throw on that play was huge. I thought that might warrant a penalty in itself, but it didn't. I feel like if the Seahawks have a 40% chance to win, it's a little bit higher with Russell Wilson at quarterback. And I feel like it's worth saying that.
They were rolling. That said, you know, Jalen Ramsey's still there. There's a reason why Doug Baldwin didn't get that first down. They've got special players on that Jags defense. So let's say it was 40. It's still a brutal way to lose 39% points win expectation.
There's no way to go about that.
We saw
big plays again gash the Seahawks. It's something that really hasn't come up a whole lot down the stretch of the season. We saw it in the Tennessee game, which I was a little reminiscent of watching the Seahawks make it look a little closer than it actually was. You know, just the run from Chris Ivory didn't turn out to be huge for the Jaguars, but you know, obviously the Keenan Cole play and, you know, just Blake Bortles being able to put it wherever he wants, being comfortable enough to have the time to put the ball where his receiver could get it, was really frustrating to watch all day.
Yeah, I'll say this. That's where Richard Sherman being out is a big deal. It's those mid-level explosives. Last year when Earl Thomas went out, it just felt like there was no top on our defense. It doesn't feel that dire without Sherman, but it does feel like those 15-yard gainers on the sideline are just there a little more often. And when you're up against Blake Bortles, you hope he's inaccurate enough to not burn you. He wasn't today. Credit to Blake Bortles. No credit to our defensive line for not turning him into his normal self. So that was a disappointing outcome in terms of those explosives. And then in the running game, the explosives that they had, a lot of them came after Bobby Wagner was out of the game. And as much as DJ Alexander stepped up and had some plays, once Wagner and Wright are out, we're playing Terrence Garvin and we don't have a Pro Bowler in the middle of our defense at all. It's tough. It's really tough.
You know, DJ Alexander, who's really just a special teams guy too. Yeah. I mean, we saw him make a great play in the Jacksonville Jaguars backfield, But, yeah, especially in such a big moment like that, allowing Fournette to spring a run like that, it's obviously backbreaking and obviously won the Jaguars the game. But, you know, even going into that last drive, the Seahawks still had a chance. They still had hope. So credit to, you know, Russell Wilson and team for bringing it as close as they did. But ultimately, you know, the Jaguars seemed, you know, they took advantage of all the play, all the mistakes the Seahawks made today.
Yeah, and we clowned on their receivers coming into this game with Hurns and Robinson out, but Dede Westbrook looks good. He's
a
rookie.
Played a really good game.
Yeah, he looks good. So, and Marquise Lee is obviously good. We didn't clown on him. We clowned on Westbrook. So,
and
that was a mistake on my part.
It was a Keenan Cole who, you know, really broke it open with a 75-yard touchdown. The biggest play since the 75-yard run they allowed to Derrick Henry. I mean, DeMarco Murray. So it's not ever good to have explosive plays, but especially if they're going to swing the game in that kind of way, it's never good to watch. And so, it's so frustrating to watch.
Yeah,
that's really the biggest takeaway from the defense today. And right after this, we'll get to this. Oh no!
Yeah. Let's just go to the break.
And right after this, we'll get to the special teams. Okay, we're back. And Spike, I don't think we can defend Blair Walsh anymore.
Nope. Apologies to all you out there. Although I will say, the reason I'm going to stop defending Blair Walsh is because he's no longer defensible. I feel like he genuinely was defensible, and now he is not. Missing a 38-yarder in a game that was that close in Florida with no weather, no reason to miss that kick, puts him at like around 50%, I believe, over his last five games on the season.
Yep.
Just a total mess. And I don't think we're going to be able to fix it midseason. We don't have the money to go out and do it relative to the cap. But it's just like, well, this is a big handicap for the Seahawks to play with down the stretch in a situation where they can't really afford to lose. They can't lose next week. They can maybe lose one of the last two games, but maybe they can't. And it's going to be tough to do that without a kicker you can rely on.
This is a Seahawks team that's as strapped for cash as they are. They can't put Cam Chancellor or Odeyabushi on the IR. It's inexcusable, these misses. It swung the Washington game, obviously. It played a part in the Falcons game, and it played a part today. And you know, there's no excuse for that. If you're going to be an NFL kicker, you know, you got to make these. I mean, Adam Vinatieri made a 46-yard field goal in the snow.
Yeah, Hauschka looked okay in the snow. I mean, it's a bummer.
Obviously, Vinatieri is a Hall of Fame level kicker.
Yeah,
but you know, it's your job. You kick the ball in the game. I mean, I know I'm making it like oversimplified, but you know, at the core of it, you know, you're an NFL kicker. You should make these kicks.
Yeah.
And you know, another problem that I had, you know, Tyler Lockett didn't look that great in the return game at all today, and that's been kind of a common theme this year. Coming into the game, really the biggest chunk of his return yards all season came against Atlanta, and outside of that, it's been kind of dismal in the running game, in the return game.
Well, I'll say this: he is like, I believe coming into the game, he was third in the league in total return yards, but a lot of that is that he does not take a knee ever. And now, mind you, late in this game when we were down two scores and he took it out and got to the 22, that's fine. You know, you want a high variance play there, and it's worth those 3 yards to try to get 50. You know, absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
I didn't
disagree with racking them up 18 yards at a time and not helping. I don't think anyone helps. I mean, they're trying to minimize the impact of the kicking game at this point. So it's not like there's other kick returners out there crushing it. It's just like our whole special teams doesn't look great right now. John Ryan is fine right now, but he is pinning guys at the 15. He's not pinning them at the 5. And in today's NFL, that's a big difference. And what you can expect punters to do is a higher level than what John Ryan is providing, play in and play out. If it weren't, I think someone tweeted this, but if it's Thorpe and Alexander, the only guys on our special teams who are coming to play every week. Without them, this is a well below average unit. With them, it's an average unit. And that's disappointing given the heights that some of our special teams units, especially in 2013 and 14, achieved.
Right. And today, special teams played such a big part in allowing that Jacksonville 3 touchdowns and 3 scrimmage plays. That big punt return you can't allow those kind of plays. We saw even John Ryan have to make a tackle on a punt return earlier today too. It's an area where the Seahawks have definitely fallen off from a few years ago, and it's concerning, especially when you get to face these better teams and field position plays an even bigger role in the game.
Yeah,
the frustration is the theme today, because as much as the game got out of hand, you know, the Seahawks still put themselves in a position to at least, you know, tie it up or even take the lead today. But it comes down to those specific plays where it just gets to be frustrating, because it's plays that the Seahawks should make.
Yeah, and let's acknowledge it's a tough weekend for Seahawks sports as a whole, or not Seahawks, Seattle sports as a whole, with Ohtani signing with the Angels and the Sounders losing in the MLS Cup final. This was sort of the feather in the cap of a really sort of throwback bad weekend for Seattle sports. I think the Huskies beat Kansas in basketball, which is just weird. But sort of neither here nor there. And we might get a hockey team. I don't know. It's all weird.
It's been a very, you know, really weird week for Seattle sports. I think it was, like, as big of a swing as the non-call on that Paul Richardson play. You know, it could have been Ohtani and MLS Cup, but it wasn't. And, you know, the Seahawks could have come back, but they didn't. So that's just the theme this week for Seattle sports, and I'm sorry. And I hope they get a hockey team, because I love hockey and I like Seattle.
Yeah, and I don't like hockey. I don't care. I mean, like, if there's this team, I'll root for it if they win. I will be a fair weather Seattle hockey fan, I guess. I don't care. Let's tip a cap to the Jaguars. They're really good.
Yes,
that defense is really good. Leonard Fournette's really good. That offensive line is super competent. It's insane. Blake Bortles played fine today. He's fine. He's not good. It's insane that that's who they're rolling with, a quarterback with a team that's otherwise so excellent. It's insane they don't go out and get a Jimmy Garoppolo. Should have signed Colin Kaepernick in the offseason. They should have drafted a quarterback. You know, like, whatever.
I will say, though, if they get that kind of play out of Bortles, and I know it's not sustainable for him, but if they get that kind of play, you know, they could be anyone in the AFC, I think. And, you know, with that kind of defense, you know, traveling anywhere on the playoffs, it's huge in those kind of games. And I think, you know, we've seen quarterbacks at Blake Bortles' level and you know, below reach a Super Bowl. So I'm kind of bullish on the Jaguars. I think it's a product of watching them today and seeing what they did. But their defense can be suffocating, and especially if they take away elements of a team and make them one-dimensional, they could be dangerous.
Yep. And I think that they're a very dangerous team. In the mold of that Bucks defense in 2002, where they were able to make a run in a pretty parity-filled year all the way to the Super Bowl and win it with Brad Johnson as their quarterback, right.
The guys I was thinking of was Brad Johnson, Trent Dilfer. Joe Flacco was better than he was at the time, but, like, you know, it's you can
that,
see
that version of Joe Flacco was way better than this version of Bortles. Yeah. It's worth that, but, like, if this year is sort of a throwback year in terms of parity, maybe a defense this good. And, I mean, it's just like you look around and everybody is decimated. I mean, I don't know. And like, this is a defense that's good enough to beat the Patriots. The Patriots are the Rams, too. Those are the two teams that are out there that are, like, looking pretty sharp right now. Although the Rams lost today, obviously. They're not unbeatable. But, like, this is a Jaguars team that I could see hanging with anybody.
Yeah, because third
best team in the AFC?
Yeah, they're the third best behind the Patriots and Steelers. The Steelers team that they beat this year.
They're big, by like 40, right?
Yeah, no, they picked off Ben Roethlisberger 5 times. They can be suffocating, and I think especially, I don't know if, you know, they can make it there, but if, say, they make it to the Super Bowl against the Rams and they force Jared Goff to make the decision to make the mistakes that he did today against the Eagles, you know, that's a game that they could very well win. And I'm not saying they can make it, or I mean that they will, but they can definitely make some noise in the playoffs.
Yeah, I agree.
I think it's just warranted to, you know, tip the cap, especially to Jalen Ramsey, because, you know, he talked the talk, he walked the walk, and he really, you know, made the play without even making a play, forcing Doug Baldwin to step out of bounds in such a high leverage situation.
Andy had the pick. I mean, yeah, he did it. He went out there and did it. And I'll say, I don't watch very much college football anymore, but I used to. And when Jalen Ramsey was at Florida State, like, y'all see how Jameis Winston isn't very good. Like, Jalen Ramsey was the best player on that Florida State team. He showed up because he looked, when he was playing cornerback on that Florida State team, he looked like a linebacker out there, but he covered better than anyone else in college football. When he came out, he arguably had every reason to think he was of the caliber to be the number one overall pick. Obviously, the guys taken above him have all also played really well. But Jalen Ramsey is the truth. Jalen Ramsey is a better – he, to me, coming into the NFL, was a better prospect than Patrick Peterson, arguably the best cornerback prospect since Deion Sanders. And like, he's playing like it.
He plays
like
with so much swagger on the field. You can see it. And
like, right? Is it like, can you think of anyone? But I mean, like, I guess Charles Woodson. Charles Woodson's the other one since Deion Sanders. But like, that's the count. Like, all the guys I'm listing are Hall of Famers. Right. Like, he's that close.
No, he's a safety in, well, I mean, he's a cornerback in the safety's body. You see him just, he's incredible. I can't say enough good things about Jalen Ramsey because, you know, there's no reason not to. And, you know, he's playing like the number one cornerback in the league. You can compare him to Xavier Rhodes, but, you know, I'll take Ramsey over that because, one, I like him. I think he talks crap, and I like that. And, you know, you can see it on the field, and he plays with passion. He plays with emotion, and that's what you want out of a football player. It's a game, and you want to see people have fun with it and play the way that they want to. And I think that he imposes his will on, you know, whoever his matchup is, and, you know, he does well.
Yeah. All right, let's do it. Let's hand out some game balls.
All right.
It's a little tough this game because it was so uneven, and there were injuries, arguably the best people. Offense and defense, what should we do first?
I think that we kind of, you know, crapped on everyone today, but we'll start off like we did before. We'll start with the offense. Spike, who are we giving these game balls to?
For me, I'm thinking Paul Richardson and Tyler Lockett. As we just talked about, those Jaguar secondary is incredible, and it's a tough secondary to take the top off of. And for those two to both hit for explosives, and Richardson's in particular was an incredible play. Lockett's, he found a soft spot, and it's as good a pass as it is a catch. Richardson made a guy miss. He caught the – it was a contested catch. I mean, I guess so. We got to give it to Paul Richardson in a way because he made the best offensive play the Seahawks have had against the best defensive opponent they've faced.
And I mean, say that there's another potential deep ball, too, that Russell Wilson just missed, that he took the top of the defense. Yeah. He got behind two Jaguars defenders.
Yeah. So credit to Paul Richardson for looking real, real good this week.
Even pre-injury this game, I think Mike Davis looked as good as we've seen him. He had, you know, four straight successful runs against a really stout Jaguars run defense. And, you know, even plays that didn't go more than 3 yards, he was still shedding the first contact that he received, and he was putting up a fight when he ran the ball. And so I just wanted to not give the game ball, but acknowledge Mike Davis's effort, because even though some plays weren't as successful as others we saw today, you know, he still played with heart. He still, you know, at least made the effort to make some people miss, even though the play wasn't going to amount to anything.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. All right. Defense. Defense is tougher, but for me, I'll say the defensive line was disappointing. The linebacker injuries are heartbreaking. The corners were okay, but not great. Maxwell got beat a couple times in crucial moments, even if he never got totally destroyed. I guess I'm going to give it to our safeties. Earl had a bunch of stops. Bradley McDougal flashed a few times. For me, they, even though we had that one big explosive that I guess you could pin on them a little bit, they did pretty dang well given how much was missing in front of them.
Yeah, in a game where Blake Bortles looked as good as he did, I don't put a lot of the blame on our safeties.
Yeah, wasn't like there weren't a lot of shots, like there weren't those middle deep shots. Like, it's something that's really interesting. It's everybody but Earl Thomas is out, and last year Earl Thomas was out, and basically it's the same thing. Like Earl Thomas himself is worth five other Pro Bowlers, it turns out, which is remarkable. But it is just like he takes away that middle 40% of the field deep, and really limits what an opposing offense can do and makes him execute at a high level. Bortles surprised by doing it.
I think if the defensive line even gets a little bit of pressure on Blake Bortles, I think our safeties look even better than they did. And, you know, it's a lot easier game on them not having to try to chase down Keenan Cole when he's running 75 yards. I think that, you know, Earl is always going to play well when he's healthy. And we see his impact. And you mentioned it, you know, even without Sherm and Cam, these guys are still competitive. And it's a crazy difference when he's off and on the field. So I can't warrant giving the game ball to anybody else than Earl Thomas. And I think we'll circle back to the offense just real fast. I don't think we've ever done this on the show before, but if we can take away a game ball, put someone at a negative game ball, Jermaine Ifedi's the person to do it with.
And the rest of the O-line played pretty well.
They played pretty well. Russell Wilson he faced pressure, but he did not face, you know, as much pressure as he would against a Riso Diambo at left tackle offensive line.
He faced more pressure against, like, the 49ers or, like, I guess they have a decent defensive line. I feel like he faced more pressure against the Packers. He faced more pressure against a lot of teams. But just Ifedi is killing us now.
On the field, during the plays, pre-play, post-play penalties, it's really inexcusable. And to have that happen week by week, it's something that he should take care of. It's something that the coaching staff should take care of. And the fact that it's not is really concerning.
Yeah, and I'll say similarly on the defensive side, don't blow up victory formations. Don't do it.
It's a bad
look.
Don't
do it. And like Michael Bennett's now done it three times. And one of them was in the Super Bowl after the most devastating play, arguably in NFL history. Okay. The other second one was against Jake Matthews, who had blown out his knee earlier in the year on a cut block. Okay. This one, I'm sorry, like a blown holding penalty is not enough to justify that level of sportsmanship. Like, I don't want to be that guy, and I don't think it in any way invalidates the good things that Michael Bennett does on and off the field. Still, though, don't blow up victory formations. It's stupid. Guys get hurt. It's not worth it. The game is over. You lost. It's fine. Move on. This game wasn't important enough to lower yourself in that way.
I heard it on the broadcast, and I hated it in the moment, but Daryl Johnson said, you know, that's not a Walter Payton Sportsmanship of the Year play.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have that reputation coming into the game. Don't tarnish it. Don't take yourself a step back, especially – you know, I know this might not matter to him, you know, given how much work he does with social activism. When you're a guy in that kind of spotlight in that regard, when it's such a polarizing position to take, don't give any sort of fuel to these guys. Don't give them ammunition to slander you anymore. Because
yeah,
you know, you're doing great work.
Like...
And I don't think that, you know, like I said, I don't think that they matter to him a whole lot. But, you know, at the same time, you know, that argument gets louder for those people rooting against what he does.
It also just, like, don't hurt the other team. Like, guys get hurt. Like, Bennett complained about Schiano when he was there in Tampa. And that's what that was Schiano stuff, man. And it's like, we're better than that. We don't need that. That's why Pete Carroll ran on the field, was to yell at them.
Yeah.
He ended up getting a penalty for it. Which I'm fine with.
Yeah, like, at that point, it didn't matter at all.
Yeah, but I'm like, it's look, I'm not going to defend them. I'm also not going to like castigate them. I'm just going to be like, that's bad. Don't do that. It doesn't. Again, it doesn't invalidate the good things that guys do, but it's also a bad thing and shouldn't be done. So
yeah,
you know,
don't do that. Don't ever try to. I won't think that they're trying to injure, but don't make yourself look like that. But
yeah,
so,
like
something.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's Bush League.
It's Bush League.
There we go. There's the proper term for it. But yeah. Something that you should do, and we're gonna end this on this note because there's no way to end after such a disappointing loss. You should go to iTunes, leave a 5-star review, air out any concerns that you have about the Seahawks coming out of this week, going into next week. Who knows? But add your Twitter handle when doing that, and you're entered to win a Pro Football Focus Edge membership. And then you can go on draft.com and play there. You can do, you know, 3-minute snake drafts from week to week, draft all stars. Use the promo code LONFL for that to get a full return on your first draft. And Spike loves it. Spike's addicted to it. I don't know if he wants to admit that.
Got cleaned out this week. I had a bad week. It's fine. I lost $2.
There we go. So, you know, on top of all the tragedies in Seattle sports this week, we'll add that on top of it. He got spanked. And so we don't want to end it on this note after every game. So, you know, here's to hoping we get a cleaner game against the Rams. Here's to hoping Bobby Wagner's healthy. And I'm Grant Goldberg for Locked On Seahawks, signing off.
I'm Spike Friedman, also signing off.